Hello, and welcome to Educational Triage, where we discuss issues in alternative education. This is a discussion about teaching by teachers, for teachers, and others who are interested in the alternative education world. We hope you find today's episode relevant, engaging, and useful. And if you do, please subscribe. I'm Tony Hunt, and I'm here to help guide you with the help of my friends Christy and Philip. Pretty much the same. And the opportunities for training teachers is so immense. And I'm just wondering why most alternative teachers are saying that when they receive their assignments and they go into these programs, there's nobody there to tell them what to do or how to do it. And I find this problematic on so many different levels because, one, we're talking about a very fragile population that if they do show up, that they are there ready to participate and to learn, I would hope. And there, and what are you supposed to do? I mean, it should not be where somebody looks at them and says, I'm as lost as you are. Let's figure out our way. But maybe something that could incorporate maybe a little bit of community building and figuring out how do I muster through all of this, because we're given training time, but that doesn't really cover it. So there are two programs, I believe, in two districts in New Jersey that have mentoring and training programs that are very active in which they train the teachers. And then I found one program that has a teacher training program, but it's 6 credits. So 2 courses for 6 credits. Mm-hmm. And that's all they give to it. And then there's another program online, and that's over in the United Kingdom that has something there.
I saw that one. That was pretty in depth. Like, they had lots of courses. Right. Like, mm-hmm. A lot of it was that kind of teacher management piece, you know, stress management and motivating, which I liked that research right. that we looked into. Because that, I mean, you really have to be a good alt ed teacher makes it look like it looks so easy, but it's because you're doing just so much front loading and classroom management all the time. But it has to be subtle, right? Mm-hmm. And so that one you talked about in the UK, I'm like, oh, that looks so cool. And then the way they were talking about the payment, I'm like, this doesn't look right. This is this money currency.
What's that funny crossed L?
That's funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, at the end of it, yeah. The pound sign. Yeah. Right. I had noticed that as I was coming through education, I was prepared to be Mr. Third Period Social Studies, and I was offered this position, what I thought it was career education. The title was career education at that point. I thought, I will teach anything, you know, because I had gotten out of school and looking for a job, and this was October-ish. And so I was nervous, and it's like, okay, I'll do this. I'll take this job, which I did not get, ironically. But I was offered another one, and it was a program for evening, and it was an all-around program whereby I taught a group of students multiple subjects, and that got my foot in the door, and I realized that there's something other than being Mr. Third Period Social Studies guy, and that was my introduction to alternative ed, and that's where it started, and that's pretty much where it's gone from. And I know of no other way to get into it. I don't know of other programs. I never knew of any other way to get to it. I was lucky, very lucky it happened. It fit me to a T. I don't know of programs. I never knew of any. No one's ever spoken of them. And I never looked into them once I started my career. So,
There are so many. I mean, there are evening schools. There are those programs where in the public mainstream schools, they will carve out an hour, say, right. in the elementary or the middle school, and they'll say, well, this is our alternative ed program. Well, no, it's not. You're using that. In a sense, it kind of is, but it's more of a homeroom where students feel like they belong to the teacher, but they don't really have a community. And so it's not really an alternative program, which would be all encompassing and helping them all the way through. And there are programs for middle schoolers. They even have some for elementary schools. And if you venture out, and you'll find a number of them there. And it doesn't mean that it goes with a lower SES, lower socioeconomic status kids. It also goes up into the upper echelons of the wealth. And there are students who start prepping for university, and those are alternative schools, but they have different methods in which they go about that, and the parents pay money for it. And then there are some that are actually publicly funded, and they too might be college prep, but taking away from that, those then would be pretty simple for any educator to go into, because they would know what they were doing, and then they would have a little bit more leeway, and maybe they could test this method or that method. But I think that one item that's really important for us to consider is how closely related with the training, if there was a mandate that alternative educators had to be trained and mm-hmm. have a certification, and if there was a mandate that it looked a specific way, without looking at the program that's over there, I would say that it would look something like what special ed has to do. Because in special ed, you need to understand a lot of the curriculum. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to know it. You need to have to be able to back that up. And yet you still have to have things on how to deal with stress and mm-hmm. and work with that, how to give yourself a timeout. working with different kinds of populations, because you'll have some that are really needy. You'll have some that are pretty standoffish. You'll have some that are more behavioral. And you have the ones, how do you meet the needs of every single student that comes in there? Because you have an IEP for every student that comes through that door, and you have to meet it with their learning style. And people think that the kids just go in there and that everything is just ice cream and cookies.
Oh,
and well, it can be if you have the right community and you have the right environment, but you don't always get ice cream and cookies, damn it. but you
have to have a wide, yes. So in special ed, as with Alted, you have to have a wide, a wide viewpoint, a wide
spectrum
of knowledge of a lot of different things. And you're right, especially, and I kind of, you know, my background is mostly secondary, where the kids are traveling into anywhere from 4 to 8 different classes. And then you mm-hmm. do have your, like your different programs within that. You've got your high needs program. You may have a behavior program. You may have a program specially designed instruction for your autistic kids. Like there may be like subsets under the umbrella of special ed. And that kind of mirrors a little bit of alt ed, right? Alt ed is kind of this huge umbrella, which mm-hmm. kind of piggybacks to the original question. It's because some people think alt ed is just like, I'm going to teach, you know, carpentry, or I'm teaching computer science or robotics, and I'm
going to teach ed.
Right, and they have a background in maybe private business that they did. I was in sheet metal. I worked in I'm trying to think of like construction or any of that kind of stuff, and now they've brought their expertise into the school and are teaching kids, whereas like my avenue is we went through a teacher training program. So you're learning all the basis of education and instructing students, and you're coming at it that way. So I think that's also one of the reasons why there's not a lot of training programs out there, because there's just such a variety, which is the strength of alt ed, but then it's also hard to create instruction because there is so much different types of classes for alt ed.
One of the criteria,
because some of them you look up online and they'll be like driving school instructor, and you're like, no, that's not what my alt ed program, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a criteria for a good alternative school program or whatever, but I'm talking about an alternative school would be something that is not on site, not in the school sense. The mega school building is, you know, it's an ominous place to be. It houses too many, you know, back to the, you know, the number, Dunbar's number, you know, of 100 or less. You know, the community breaks down after that, and they become a school whereby if it's off site, I was lucky enough that this program that I began to teach in was on, it was in a school that was off site. It wasn't a part of the high school. It was in an older building, right, which had its fun problems, but it was off site. The kids went there. It was kind of quaint, and it built a community. And then the programs within it were small. There weren't a lot of kids in it, so they got to know each other. And there was even a teen parent program. It had a teen parent program nearby, which was really great because that happens. And, you know, these kids learned to own that situation. And it was kind of the envy of some of the teachers who were having kids that age too, going, geez, I wish I had that open to us. But it was really a very encompassing program and a community program. And there are things you can do in a bigger high school that builds a community, but essentially, you know, to build an all-around learning experience, I think it should probably be small, and it should be in a place that's more personal, not just the wing of a bigger building. But I'm kind of biased. That's where I came from, and that worked extraordinarily well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
That's probably my experience, a little bit of, right. Sometimes being not, I mean, there's pros and cons, right, to not having your program or classroom be like dead center in the school, right? Like if you're a little bit on the periphery, you have a little bit of freedom, right? Good or bad, that you can kind of do what you want because you don't have 20,000 people walking by your door every day checking in and did it, you know. There's a little bit, but then sometimes you're like, no one knows we're here, you know?
Well, when I first started running a program and developing a program on my own, which is right after I was in the private contract school, that private alternative school, I came over and then I began working in residential. And I walked through the door and it was a little schoolhouse. It was a little one-room schoolhouse, really. I looked at my assistant and I said to her, I said, so how do we do things here? And she said, you're the one in charge. It's up to you. And I said, you want to throw me a bone here? And she said, you're the one in charge. You make those decisions. And I was, I did not like her. I did not like her at all.
I said the same thing happened. Yeah.
I told her years later, I said, I thought you were just the biggest BI. I said, I really thought, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into? But we ended up having a fantastic relationship. And what that did was it gave me a lot of permission. I didn't have anybody breathing down my neck. I had a lot to learn. It opened up the doors for me to invite people to come in. We were able to do stuff around the table and have conversations. It was fantastic, all the things. And the kids didn't want to leave. And I had them doing things like breaking down grammar, looking at sentences. What's that called? One a day or something like that, grammar. And I gave teams like 10 sentences and then they had to present them and then they had to explain why they broke them.
We did the same thing. It's like when you talk about student-centered curriculum, it's like, well, I don't know of any other way to do it because I never tried to impose my curriculum on them. I just wanted them to get to certain things and I kind of let them guide me. And they always took me to places that were harder than I'd take them anyway. There wasn't any content, you know, per se there was content, but it wasn't so specific that I was daily scheduling. So we had some strange stuff going, like the bodacious sentence. I called it the BS, but we'd come up with 10 really outrageous words that they had to know the definition of. And I said, okay, now make one sentence out of it. Try. And I thought that was a challenge, but they could do it. a couple of them would pull it off. And I'm like, I am truly impressed, gentlemen. I bow before you. It's like, wow.
Well, then we started doing the open houses, and I let them be in charge of setting that whole thing up. I would guide them.
Something like that. Yeah.
We would guide those, and we would invite everybody, and the superintendent would come, all the board members would come. We had parents, we had teachers, we had people from the university, and since they came, they decided to start writing us grants for materials, and they incorporated it. We had such a good outpouring. And people would say, this is fantastic. And I'm thinking, I'm shaking my head saying, oh my God, this just looks so terrible. I don't know why, but that was the control and the perfectionist in me. And people were saying, I have learned so much from your students today. And that gave me hope. And it just made me feel so much better because I was kind of putting them out there, and I wanted to prove to people that this is not a dumping ground for the district. These are actual kids who are actually learning. They're wonderful. And don't you dare degenerate them in your minds by thinking that they are less than. They are just as good, if not better, and they are capable of going places that we haven't gone.
Which drives down the point there. You came up with a couple of readings I was inspecting, and they all came under the premise of the alternative programs, you know, like the jail of the high school, you know, or the school system.
Right.
And so who said that an alternative school kid is the bad kid, the troublemaker, you know, the girl or boy who committed a crime or did something so awful they can no longer be at the regular school? What are you talking about? I mean, I don't want to be at the regular school per se, you know.
It's like, but it's been used. There's a cognitive dissonance that goes on because they use the alternative program as kind of the last chance for these kids to get an education, but it's a punishment.
It's viewed as a punishment. That's how it's almost sold.
Well, no, because if you are expelled or suspended, or if you have disciplinary problems, then you go down there until your sentence is over, and then you can rejoin everybody at the regular school. And there are actually disciplinary alternative programs around the country
where
that's exactly what happens.
Yes.
And so there has been this bastardization of what needs to be a building of a good progressive, a good cohesive and positive experience for students in education, rather than something where the kids go in and they are just as regimented as they were before, and they're going to go through it, and we're going to do behavior modification, etc. There's a different way of doing that. And my first program, and even my second program, there was severe behavior modification. One of them used positive peer culture, which is something that I think we can talk about in a different episode. Mm-hmm. But it was about teaching students what the culture should be. And it's not taking them out of what's going on at their home, because sometimes it's a reflection of what's happening at home. Sometimes it's a reflection of their own lives because, and I'm going to keep driving this point, school outcomes are only determined by the schools. The impact of a school on student outcomes is between 1 to 14%. Now think about that.
So say that one more time. The 1 to 14%.
Schools have a 1 to 14% impact on student outcomes.
That's
from the American Statistical Association in a study done in 2014. Those were their results. I haven't found anything since then. And this is the data that's being used, and it's prevalent in a lot of publications. So when schools say, we have to do this because this is going to do this for this kid, maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe. What we do in alternative ed is we're able to take the whole child. We teach to the whole child, but we're not teaching. We are mentoring, we are guiding, we are presenting, and we're allowing them to guide themselves and take us on their journey with them. It's a partnership.
Yeah. You know, I owe you somewhat of an apology in a strange way, because when what I said earlier was biased as all get out, because again, this program that I found myself in, you know, teaching in, and the whole set of programs that came with it, the thing about it was, is they were chosen. And so when students came to us, they weren't sent and then released back into the wild of the high school. They actually came to the programs, they were interviewed, there were conditions, and then they invested in the program and the program invested in them. And there were other ones, there were full-time ones. And that had a very successful rate. It was much higher. We had a high impact on kids. I really do believe higher than that 14%, because once they were chosen, you know, we had like an attendance policy that made them come to school. We had academic policy that made them earn a certain amount of credits per month, really. We broke it down for them. We showed them how to be successful. We had parents come in. We had, you know, if they had a child, you know, their child, we had them call and take care of the child, things like that. It was really quite a commitment, whereby other programs, I think you're pointing out, don't have quite that commitment. They don't see it as a choice, maybe. And maybe that's the difference, is if you make that choice to commit and you're accepted into that community, you definitely may have a better success rate.
Well, even my first program, you know, when I went to interview for it, there were students that were involved in the interview. And the interviewing process and the decision process. And I thought about that because I just went through a hiring process recently, and today as I walked through my door, I smacked myself up outside the head and it hurt. And I said, why? It would have been so incredible to have had that. And why didn't I think of that? And I think partly it was COVID and what was surrounding everything, and just so many things that are going on in my own life right now that prevented me from thinking as clearly as maybe I should have. But we had these interviews with a guardian and a child, and then we would meet as a team and we would go over who we could bring in. The second program, that was a court decision because it was residential. The next program that I started up was the I ran a strategic tutoring program, and that was by student consent. And so I would talk to the students, and then they would come in, and then if they wanted to drop out, they could, because it was for them. And I had some parents who were furious with that, and they said, no, we demand that our child. And I said, your kid doesn't want to do it, and I can't work with them. I just can't. I'm not wasting my time on somebody who doesn't want to do the work. And so they were furious, and they called the principal, and the principal said, well, you're going to have to bite it. And then
were those his words?
Or something.
I don't know.
Yeah, can you imagine?
Well, he had, you know, I've He's always had so much autonomy. It's not even funny. Mm-hmm. And so it's very different now because I feel like I'm being watched. And
is that a later episode we can discuss that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, because I keep snipping off those puppet strings and burning them.
I noticed something myself.
And but I always did. And then this program that I'm in right now, the students, they interview to be in there. And if things don't work out for them, it's like no harm, no foul, because you can't put your ego into it, right? And they always have the chance of coming back unless they do something really egregious. For example, pulling out a vape pen on school property when you're in an elementary school, when you're supposed to be working there, that kind of stuff. You skip going to your internship because it's basically an internship based program where the kids go out to internships with different businesses, and then they come back and they earn credits and they learn from those. And if they skip the internship and they do it twice, we've had kids who took some things off the shelves and they were going to quote unquote pay for them later. And they were caught So that kind of stuff. So sometimes we have to mitigate the damage and see what happens, but a lot of times they're fired and then we kind of have to let them go, which is really sad. But
yeah,
I've never lost a relationship with those kids. And I've told them, I said, it has nothing to do with how I feel about you. It's just the rules. And I'm still here. If you still need me, if you want to talk to me, if you need to unload, I'm here.
Right.
So, and I think having that relationship, the basis of any good program is the relationship building that you do, I think.
Yeah. And I think we've talked about that. I think that was like the building block, the foundation, right? An episode mm-hmm. before this, we talked about it. But I think, I mean, originally our topic was like, why is there no training? And so, I mean, there's been so much that we've just, right? I think also it's also, I feel, you know, we're up in the Pacific Northwest area and, you know, every state has different requirements and certification that you have to have. And if you move in from another state, you know, you have to pass different tests, but each state has their own. And a lot of times when you like kind of prepping for this episode, I was just like, let's just Google, you know, alternative ed, and Google and your searches treat it as like, I want an alternative way to become certified.
Yes.
As opposed to going to, you know, I went to my college, right? I'm like, that is not what I want. And you have to do some really hard searching to try and find anything. And then you end up with like I said, the driving school in Kentucky or something. No disrespect to that program, but I'm like, that sounds an great.
Alternative teacher.
But that's, yeah, but it's alternative ways to become a teacher, and as opposed to I want to be a teacher of alternative ed.
If you search for a podcast, it comes up with some pretty wild stuff too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But so that just kind of goes to show that there is. But if you want to become like, how do I become a high school teacher? Boom, you can find that information quickety quick. You go to, you know, TSPC.
10 easy steps.
Yeah. And so there's, you know, for whatever, I've lived in several states and there's definite ways to do it, but those are for your, for lack of a better phrase, your traditional way. I want to be a math teacher. I want to be an English teacher. I want to be a teacher, you know, a health teacher, all those core curriculums, but alt ed. And then they're like, and then Google explodes on my computer and it starts to cry because it doesn't understand what I'm asking.
Well, it's interesting because I remember teaching a couple of WE courses down at Portland State, and I would have these people and they say, well, where do you work? And I would tell them, and they say, what kind of program is that? And I would tell them. And I finally got to the point where I would just go, and a number of people would come to me later and they'd say, you know, I went to an alternative school.
And yeah.
Like, you're kidding. Yeah. And they said, yes, it saved my life. I mean, they always said wonderful things about it. Mm-hmm. But even some of our businesses that we work with, I've got business owners who graduated from alternative programs. And one husband and wife, that's how they met. And, you know, it's nice, but it comes back to, and just because you went to an alternative program doesn't mean that you understand how to teach an alternative program.
Exactly. Because
it might even be exactly more difficult.
Like, I'm sure we've all had teachers where you're, you know, they are knowledgeable about their subject, but they're not good teachers, right?
Well, first, I can't I can't explain it to people. You know, they say, what's an alternative high school teacher? I said, well, you know that school you went to where the bells rang and you went to your locker and went to the next class? Yeah, it's nothing like that. it's kind of like not like that at all, you know. And or I'll say also, you know, it's just a different way of learning. I mean, it's hard to explain, and so it becomes a kind of a like a different language, unless you run into someone who's been through it and they go, oh yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. It's, you know, yeah, I know you know me. It's like this, it's all of us have been through the first grade, but few of us are equipped to teach it. So it's kind of, it's sort of like there's this, there's not really a way to teach people how to do it, I guess.
You have to mentor them.
You have to mentor them.
To be, and they have to be willing and open. And you have to find a mentor who's willing to be open to mentoring as well. Somebody who actually knows what they're talking about. Now, I did reach out to several education departments around the country.
Yeah.
And I asked the person who was in charge of alternative ed why they thought that there were no teacher training programs for alternative ed. And the response I received was deafeningly quiet. So if I asked them what were the components that they thought were imperative to teacher training, they had no problems giving me ideas. But why there are no teacher education alternative, alternative education teacher training programs. Mm-hmm. There was no response.
Well, you know what? Because it's not, it's like this. If you're into teaching your subject, then you aren't really ever going to teach alternative, because that's teaching alternative is teaching about learning. It's teaching kids. It's teaching about life. It's being flexible. It's really knowing a subject enough to know when to say, I don't know, and find somebody who does know. It's so many different nuances. And I know teachers will say, well, I do that, and I do that in my third period every day. It's like, yeah, but you also have to be special ed and teach math and French a little bit if you have to, a little bit, and say, I don't if you can't, and all that intangible stuff. And you can't do that if you're just teaching your subject.
But I would think that they would have – I hate to think that it's only a 3-credit course or a 6-credit course.
Well, you could get all in at least 5.
Would think that there would be some way, because, well, I don't think anybody really sets out to become an alternative education teacher.
That's, I think, is absolutely accurate.
Right.
I think it's, I taught IB. I've taught almost every subject under the sun, and I have been a consultant for migrant education, and I going around to the different communities. I was an ELD consultant. I've consulted on building rubrics to pass mathematics and taught workshops on that for different districts. But nothing prepared me for alternative ed. Yes, I have a good knowledge base. And yes, I know when my goose is cooked, but that's when I look at the kids and I say, okay, teach me what you know, and let's see where we can move on from there. And that's when the student all of a sudden starts making some connections, or we figure things out.
You're because a problem when a student solver gets, with them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, and you exhibit those things,
You have to, but part of the problem comes when the student is so entrenched and their anxiety level is so high, and you can only give them some suggestions as far as what can happen. And I don't know if I'm willing to look at a group of students and just say, I need somebody to speak your language and translate what I'm saying to everybody else, because nobody seems to be getting it. And they'll get up and they will proclaim exactly what I said. They will parrot phrase me. Parrot, not paraphrase, but parrot phrase, right, as right. in the bird. And everybody will look at them and say, oh, okay, we get it. And so sometimes just having them parrot phrase or even paraphrase gets everything through. And I think maybe I need to do a little bit more of that. But just knowing that these are things that you need to work on and being open to that, I think is really, really important. But how do we teach that in the university?
Right. And how to apply in multiple areas. Because, if there, and I think it differs slightly from just being a CTE teacher where I only teach this one subject, if you're certified in English language, ELA, then you're teaching that. And if you're certified in math, then you teach that. And so if you're certified in CTE in culinary, that's what you teach. But then like alt ed, you have to be able to do a lot. And you're also teaching kids like the vocational skills they need and the life skills that they need. And so it kind of goes beyond just like, you know, we auto repair, right? There's no way I could do that. That's not my background. I don't have knowledge in it, right? But I can teach kids how to be successful in that class by teaching them, you know, how to self-advocate and how to be communicative and how to figure things out and problem solve and all those skills. And so I think sometimes...
Could you?
Yeah.
Well, I don't mean to interrupt, but it suddenly dawned on me. Have you ever thought with some of those kids, like in auto shop, that you know what? Can you make a video for me that I can give you credit for, where you show me and explain to me and teach me how to do X?
Yeah, right?
You know, that's worth credit.
I think those are those outside the box kind of thinking, because not a lot of students take that class who are interested in automotives and or they want to know more about it, but their long-term goal is probably not to become a mechanic or an auto repairer, right? Uh-huh. They're not going to become engine repair, but I took auto and I loved it because I did want to know how my car ran and how to change a tire and stuff, but I was certainly not going to be you know, I'm going to replace this engine this weekend. Like, that wasn't me. But like the hands-on and like taking shop, oh, I loved it. But I kind of got off on a tangent. But yeah, you could have a student who
loves it that much.
Squirrel. But yes, they can be interested and be knowledgeable about it, but they don't have maybe the skills to demonstrate that knowledge in one way. So we have to, again, in our alted brain, how are other ways that you can demonstrate this
learning
knowledge?
Don't stop at the schoolroom door. That's for sure. I like to think that most of the learning we do is done outside of the school, for sure.
And I think there are some people who are just natural alternative ed teachers. They just have a knack for it.
I think
and some
right.
who can be brought into it. I mean, honestly, the first alternative school I went to, we had one teacher who... it just wasn't a good fit. And she finally just called in and said, I can't do this anymore. I quit. And I'm not saying that it was easy, but the kids did not forgive her. They said she should have stayed and talked to us and let us know how we could help her.
Mm-hmm.
But then I thought, yeah, you're the ones that really drove her batty. So, but you know, you got to be able to take that. You got to be able to take things and let things go off your back and not take things really personally, because they're testing your mettle. They want to make sure that you're actually there for them and that you can take it. And that because they have so many people that come and go in their lives, that they want to make sure that you're actually going to stay and that you really are invested in them.
The consistency is super important.
Mm-hmm. But how do you teach that? And how do you teach relationship building? How do you teach, all the bases? How do you teach how to teach math? And what are some different ideas? What is project-based learning? Mm-hmm. What is student-centered learning? How do you, I believe that one thing that we're going to do when our students come back on the first or second, I think it's the second day, they're going to design and take our program and recreate it in how they see it. And that gives us an idea of where they're coming from. And I was challenged because somebody said, oh no, we need to put in these components so that they do that with these. And I said, no, we'll put those in because that way they it'll be more malleable and they can determine that, but they have to have, but if they're working with, if you tell them that they have to have these pillars, and they have to go in certain places or they have to use these things, then you're stymieing them.
You're limiting them. Don't do that.
Yeah. So let's give them the brush and the canvas and let them paint what they want. And then we can figure out how do we incorporate these other things.
How else are they going to learn?
And it gives them more possession.
That's so hard for teachers to have to back off it's so hard.
Right. Right? You're pointing out this discussion that we're having the obvious about, but it's like a lot of teachers can't do that. Like, no, wait a minute. There is an objective and we will achieve that objective regardless. It's like, yeah, but maybe something else reveals itself along the way. It's like, I never thought of that. I like that better. Thank you, guys. That's much better than this old dry lesson that I pulled out of file cabinet A.
Right. Because then you're just teaching all these learners to sit there until I tell you how to do it. And then, you know, when they graduate and then their employer is like, why are you waiting for me to always tell you what to do?
Because right? That's so true. It's so true. Why are you waiting for me to tell you? Well, because you're the boss. I'm the boss. I'm not your dad. It's like, geez.
Didn't you know how to do this already?
Not your mom. Waiting for you.
Yeah.
And then we're also going to be brainstorming ideas for field trips and other things.
I always like doing that. They come up with some great ideas that I just don't. Yes. So, yeah.
And we have our program does Adopt a Highway twice a year. And so they receive volunteer hours for that. So we have to put all that together and we'll get that for them. And I think we're going to wait a couple of weeks because with COVID, everything is kind of changing kind of rapidly.
Yep.
And I received some emails today from some of our internships saying, hey, what's going on?
It's like, well, good.
Let's stay in touch. But here's what we're planning on doing. And yes, we're doing internships, but let's stay in touch and figure these things out because we'll figure something out with you.
Strange times.
Yeah, but it's, how do you take a program and how do you run with it? What would be the most wonderful program that a teacher would find for themselves? And being able to teach, because everybody should know math. And if you don't know math, Sister Mary Ellen, and I had Sister Mary Ellen around the same time that Cheech and Chong came out with their album.
So all right.
If you know about that, if you know
Sister
that
Mary
one.
Elephant.
Class, shut up.
Okay, we're going off the rails here. Keep
anyway,
going. Same with you.
She said the best class, if you're a teacher, you should always teach the class that you know the least about or don't understand. And I think that there's a lot of truth to that. I think with some people, it's kind of an ice making an ice cream cake in the middle of July in Death Valley, but it's just a total mess and loss. But you need to you need to be able to learn. And I've told kids, look, I'm not good with this stuff, so we're going to learn it together. All right, we did that with Latin, and we had the best time, and those kids loved it, and they just gobbled it up. And with math, I relearned Algebra 1. I relearned geometry. And it just reinforced what I knew. And I was surprised at how much I actually knew. So.
Right. If you do that enough, you have to review the stuff that you thought you knew because you're questioning
yourself.
Discovering
it together. And then you. Mm-hmm. And it is scary for teachers, right? Because you're like, I'm not sure where, you know, I've set sail and we don't know where we're sailing, but we're all in this boat together. But it is a little freeing. Or if you have kind of like a little foundation, hey, we did that one time in our class and one time I did it with when I was teaching at a deaf school or it was a deaf classroom in a mainstream school. Anyway, and so we learned about the Iditarod race. And so we learned everything, like why, you know, and then they would just ask questions like, great question, no idea, let's figure that out. And then, you know, how does one become a dog sled racer? And what about the dog's paws? And, you know, what happens with the weather? How do you not get lost? And just these huge questions. And it is kind of cool to be like, I don't know, let's figure it out. And then, you know, then the learning, as opposed to they just sit there and like, well, here's how they figure out with the dogs, right? Snoozeville. But when they would, and then we kind of broke it down into like the competition part of it. And then another group kind of took over the animal part of it. And it turned into this, and then we would track the race. And then we learned all about math, right? So that's where the math came in. How much do they have to cover in so many, you know, if the race is this long, you can't see them gesturing, but my hands are this far apart. And then if they need to cover this in so many days, how much do they have to cover per day? How fast do they have to move? And, you know, you got to bring your own food. And, you know, all these questions just kept coming from it. And it just kind of came from this out of the blue question of like, oh, what's the Iditarod? I don't know. yeah, let's figure it out. And so those kind of explorations, I think, are really cool. Mm-hmm. But you have to, like Philip said a while back, you know, super hard, because it could have been easy for me, like, yeah, let's talk about that later. But we really have to get to this lesson that I have planned for today. Right? You had to be able to, like, let's just spitball and see where this goes. And it's kind of cool.
Philip was doing a thing with Mount Everest and the ascent on Mount Everest one year.
Oh, my God.
Many years,
so cool.
Actually. I did it for 5 years. Yeah, I would actually communicate with the teams on Everest themselves.
That sounds exhausting, but
that
kind of lesson, though, would be really neat.
Yeah, well, he did that in the classroom.
Yeah, see, those are the kind of... those are the, you know, that's the old adage, like, they just don't teach you that in your graduate program, right?
Those good times.
But you have to be comfortable as a teacher, to let go of the reins a little bit and let your class kind of go where the interest lies, and be able to also be a little bit knowledgeable enough about it that you can bring in some of those real, those skills, those 21st century skills that you want them to learn, right? And so I think it's just, you know, again, it kind of goes back to, what do you want your alt ed teacher to look like? And that's, you know, they got to be resourceful. They got to be patient.
I want to look like a pirate.
Right. You know, understand, like, oh, this is not exactly where I thought this was going to go. Right.
I do. I want to look like a pirate, like Keith Richards or something.
See, I kind of think of an alternative teacher as a blob, because they're constantly consuming, but they're able to go around and do so much. And they're growing, because an alternative teacher needs to be a lifelong learner.
Yes.
And we say that we want students to become lifelong learners, but most teachers stop. And they feel like, well, I've already done the school, I've already done this, I've already done that. And they don't really do a whole lot more. So they go home and they watch TV. And they have their lives, but they don't really consume a lot of learning that they can share, or they share only within their own groupings. And they don't, for example, I was in a school where the teachers were all reading different books and they would discuss those. And I said, well, how do you parlay that out to the students? And they looked at me and said, oh, no, no, we already have our curriculum for them. And so when I started teaching the kids James Joyce at the freshman level,
oh no,
they were well, it was the story of Epiphany, which is pretty.
Yeah,
I can't even say tame.
It's not your normal, like, oh, what, everyone learns that, right? It's not
James Joyce.
Like Romeo and Juliet. Well, we all learned that, right?
But so I was testing their mettle. I wanted to test their mettle. And one of my students, her father was a professor of English. And I ended up in his course. And he looked at me and he said, your name sounds very familiar. I said, well, I had your daughter. And he said, oh, you're the one that taught her James Joyce, aren't you? And I said, yeah, I am. And he said, oh, I love you.
Oh, nice.
I said, well, nice. Yeah. He said, but that's not going to give you an A. So, but I learned so much from him too.
Good.
But, you know, I think we need to wind up.
Okay.
We do.
And thank you so much. And maybe exactly. And I'm hoping that this reaches the right ears, and maybe some people will start thinking about implementing.
Yeah.
figuring out and implementing some programs that will help encourage more people to study alternative education and to look for programs. And maybe it has to be an online one, just for a certification, or even for some kind of independent coursework that helps guide. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it does need to be virtual or online, just because there aren't huge programs throughout your cities, right? I mean, it's extremely difficult to get a centralized location for a lot of alt ed teachers in one spot.
Right.
If you're, unless you're just driving. But it would also be really neat to then hear what are some of the programs that other states are doing. What are they doing in mm-hmm. North Carolina? And tell me more about that Kentucky driving program, right? And right. what are some things that are happening so we don't all have to reinvent the wheel, which we teachers seem to always have to be doing. So I think that would be a great way to kind of expand. Especially, I mean, if colleges were smart, they would latch onto this because the drive for or the need for these students who have this background is just not stopping. It's just growing exponentially, and they can't get enough teachers to teach it.
And so or it could be really
smart for people out there
that we're standing in a moment.
Like their satellite or their online program within their teacher ed programs have these courses that talk exactly about what we've been clamoring for.
It could be though that we're standing in a different moment. We're standing in a moment where people are moving away from schools in the traditional sense, and they're setting up programs in private schools outside that. And that's another way it's going too. And I know of programs that kind of operate that way. They don't operate within school districts or, within the charter school programs.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah, we're still going.
Do we need to? Oh, sorry. I did my scene like mic drop.
I heard it.
You lose it. We lost everybody. Well, okay. I think this is a topic that it needs to continue and be expanded upon. And I really hope that this can be a nice
we'll just read that in for then. That.
Perfect. So, from all of us to all of you, thank you very much, and we hope to see you at our next episode. And if you have any comments or reviews, drop them right down there for us. We hope to hear from you. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that's another way it's going, too. And I know of programs that kind of operate that way. They don't operate within school districts or, within the charter school programs.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah, we're still going.
Oh, sorry. I did my scene. Like, mic drop.
I heard it.
You lose it. We lost everybody. Well, okay. I think this is a topic that it needs to continue and be expanded upon, and I really hope that this can be a nice
we'll just read that in
for
that.
Perfect. So, from all of us to all of you, thank you very much, and we hope to see you at our next episode. And if you have any comments or reviews, drop them right down there for us. We hope to hear from you. Thanks. Bye-bye.